Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe is with us. Hi, Dan.
What's up?
This is the portion of the show where you get to ask Zill football questions.
Oh, great. Love this. I've got 2 hours to do it, and I have a lot. We got
I saw
so
you
much
planned
to
a show out already.
We got so much. Yeah, I just wrote a little.
You were there on Sunday. Nice. You saw
I was there with Zill on Sunday. I'm going to be in Pittsburgh with Zill. We got Pittsburgh stories to tell. A lot to do. And, I mean, Zill, I don't know. We have a decision at the end of a game like that to get in the elevator. It's hard in Miami. You know, right. Small elevator, about 1,000 guys got to go downstairs. And I was, you know, once they kicked the field goal, back there, and the lady
start walking down.
The lady says, "Elevator's available. Anybody wants to go down now?" And I'm like, "I think I'll stay and watch this. I just want to see what kind of a play the Dolphins had. I mean, I knew the game was over. Patriots had won. That was, you know, official. But I figured
I would have gotten the elevator.
I know.
If I had the option.
It doesn't come up that often.
If I wasn't on live air, I'd have been in the elevator.
Yeah, it's and that's where you end up. You don't want to end up there when that happens. So. Yeah, I lucked out. My instinct was, I think I'll just see what kind of a play they have. You know, it was like.
Did anyone get on?
Yeah, a few. And Zill can attest, when Belichick came into the room, there was no cleaning up this week. You know, coming out with a tie and like a half hour later.
Was you, me, Steve Burton, one other guy?
Nobody was there. This happened to me once in a Bruins game when Claude came out, and I had nothing to say because I didn't know anything about hockey. I'm like, what do I ask this guy?
Well, it's good you covered a game.
There's nobody there. Yeah. But so Bill came out, and it was sparse. And it was like, is no one going to ask anything? And it was just such a, finally a few guys started creeping in, but I'm sure some guys missed it. And he was fast. He was in
and out. I'd say 60 to 70% of the media missed it.
Yeah, there was nobody there. It was very odd. And it was also kind of hard to know what to ask after something like that. You know, and we got the Gronk question get out there quickly, and he did answer that. You know, he talked about the long ball and then the Desperado defense, which I never knew.
Was he telling the truth?
Well, it was a mistake. It happens. We all make mistakes.
Why is it a mistake if Gronkowski's standing on the 10 or the 15 and not on the goal line?
Right.
They knew to move him up. I mean, he was out there for – he was out there to do – if Miami's stupid enough to throw it long, we're putting the big guy out there to knock him down. He didn't line up on a goal line.
All right.
People don't talk about that.
All right. And again, you know what it's like down there. It's like my football portion here.
Yeah.
Down there, you know, with not chaos, but the quickness of things that are going on. So, is it Bill? Is it Flores? Is it by any chance Steve Belichick? Who's making that call?
No, it's Bill.
It's all Bill.
They practice this stuff Friday. Well, they go through it. Brady will do a two-minute offense. They do that. They do all the kicking call-outs, and then they do take a knee. They do the kill play at the end of the game. Matt Slater, get in the game. You go deep.
Yep.
You know, and imagine if Brady fumbled a snap like that, and Matt Slater can't make the tackle. What are you putting safety back there behind Brady?
Yeah.
You know, that's the typical question. I don't have a problem with the Gronkowski thing being back there. I have a problem with McCourty not being on the field.
Okay.
Your best tackler.
All right. And that's Bill.
Yeah. That's all Bill.
Okay. And was Tannehill leveling with us with the part about that it's Boise and they work on that and that they work
on it? Yeah, you have to practice that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
They do.
And I jumped on Tannehill for saying, oh, we knew we had it. We knew we had a chance because I saw Gronkowski back there. I saw that in print and I didn't hear it.
Oh, I heard it.
You did?
Yeah.
But he said that and it got taken out of context in print because he said it as he was running down the field.
Right.
He then saw that. So
I
was wrong on that.
He meant as the play was unfolding.
I didn't know that. When it was in print right after the game, I thought, oh, you're full of crap because you couldn't see anything on third down.
I never took it that way.
He couldn't read a third down blitz.
No, I didn't take it that way. Yeah. Of course, I mean, they talked about it on TV, right? They did mention it. Was it Fouts or whatever?
I don't know. I don't hear the broadcast.
Mention what?
That Gronk was out there in the alignment.
Oh, I don't know what
the play. I think they did.
I don't know if they.
I didn't notice it until I saw him miss the tackle.
I mean,
I wasn't looking at the defensive backfield for the Patriots on that play.
I expected him to come out. I even said it on the call prior to it. You get your prevent out there. I said kick it through the end zone. Get your prevent out there and throw Gronkowski back because that's your kill play. That's the ending play.
Didn't Moss have that assignment back in the day?
Yep, Moss had it. Josh Gordon had it in Chicago because Rob was not active in that game. Yeah, you put your tallest athletic receiver back there.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was it was.
It's kicking the nuts.
It was a moment.
Yeah.
It really was.
How does that rank in terms of bad regular season losses for
I've been polling on this. I mean, I wrote it in the moment because, you know, we still didn't know that Pittsburgh was going to lose later that day.
No,
that softened it a little bit. I mean.
No, everybody.
Houston had already lost, you know, and the KC game was. They were right where you were. They were going
overtime.
Overtime was all. The kid had just missed the 43-yard kick to end that one. And then they were going into OT, so you didn't know. But I think the Pittsburgh loss softened it. We don't know now the whole totality of the cost of this thing. because we don't know if it's going to make – it could mean they have to play an extra playoff game. It could mean they're on the road in the second round. I mean, there's all different things. They're not going to get the top seed. It could come down to the fact they would have had it if you know, like if KC loses this week, et cetera, they would have had it if they just – I don't think it's going to end up with that. But when the whole thing is over, if they either have to play four games this year or they have to go on the road early or – God forbid, the AFC Championship in KC, which, you know, in KC only has three losses, they lose one more, and they don't get to the Super Bowl, it's magnified. It gets bigger. It goes back to this. You know, we don't know exactly what the cost. Right now, it hasn't cost them anything. They're still the two seed, and it's nothing. And if they win out the next three, it's nothing.
Going into this weekend, both Zoe and Hardy, you're picking the Steelers.
I am picking the Steelers, too. I don't see the Steelers losing four in a row.
They're desperate.
I like their talent. They're good at home. And the last 3 weeks have been bleep shows for them. We know. It's all at the end, too. But I just – we can't fall back on this. The Patriots always make them crap their pants there, and they do stupid things.
There's a trend on the road, you know, with this team. You can't refute it right now. Yeah. And I can't even refute it. And right. I dislike Pittsburgh. I'm not rooting – I don't want to pick Pittsburgh in this, but I'm leaning Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Pats are 3-4 on the road, and that includes Jets and Bills, which has to be discounted to a degree. So they're really – they're 1-4.
You give them like a half win?
Yeah, 1-4 plus.
Think about those wins against the Jets and Bills. Bills was competitive for a little bit. The Jet game was tied 10-10 at halftime.
Yeah.
I remember screaming at halftime, what is going on? You know, they're not a good road team right now.
It hasn't been a good road season for them. But I still can't believe they lost that game.
So a loss this weekend puts them in 9-5.
Yeah.
And needing back-to-back wins to close out the year to be 11-5.
Yeah.
It's still a damn good record. 11-5, whether it's 12-4, they've won Super Bowls.
And can I ask a seeding question? Okay, sure. Let's say they were 11-5.
Yeah.
And, you know, the loser of the Chargers-Chiefs ends up with three or four losses, whatever.
They can't end up with three or four. Either one's
in, I understand. Yeah. But one of those teams goes to the fifth seed.
Right.
And then could, you know, face the Patriots in a second round game in Foxborough.
Correct.
That is where the AFC East helps you enormously.
Yeah.
Being in the division you're in, because winning the division is artificially enlarged. It's more important than it should be. And that's where this whole notion that, oh, the AFC East, no big deal, you know. Yeah, it is a big deal. The comfort that they have of that, you could have two more losses than your team you're playing at home in the second round. I rest my case.
AFC East. Oh, and you got AFC West that has two good teams, and because you have multiple good teams, you get a team that gets penalized.
Of course.
That gets sort of pushed back to being a wild card team.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Giddy up, let's go. The snow, we're riding on a wonderland of snow. Giddy up, it's Brand, just holding your hand. It's a fairy land.
What's up with the whip? Shh. S&M. Santa's in her leather hood.
Santa's a freak.
Get it in the sleigh.
Santa's a freak.
A little Beetle and Zoe flashback for you.
I like the Baby It's Cold Outside one. We should tee that one.
No, we're not playing it anymore.
We were ahead of the game
took
on that
the
one.
Wrong way.
Me too.
We were so ahead of the game on that one.
We made fun of it. We did a parody of it, and people took that the wrong way.
Is that the one that's got the Cosby reference now?
We had a what?
One of those songs.
What the hell are you talking about?
One of those sentimental songs. Now, there's a line in there that's very offensive. It's hey, what's that drink there? Whatever, like that.
Yeah, baby, it's cold outside.
Baby, it's cold outside. Say what's in this drink?
Right, it's a Cosby reference. You know, predated. You know, it's like somehow
that
new show.
That song's been out since
1955.
You're dangerous. You're going to get us in more trouble for things.
Do you know how long ago that song was written?
Yeah.
Do you know when the Cosby Show was created?
No, I was making fun.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I am aware of the timetables.
Did you think it was serious? I thought it was even serious.
But in today's world, it's when that's song.
Oh, get a grip, Snowflake. Jesus.
No, I'm telling you. That thing is, you know, over.
I watch Rudolph on a loop in my house.
You makes you a fine classics. American.
Damn right it does.
Because they don't show that on TV anymore.
They do. It's on every night. You find it any night. Everybody's got it on.
There was even a little
more now.
There's a little pushback on Charlie Brown this year too.
Why?
What's the pushback?
What is that problem?
I didn't
what,
see
send
it.
A kid out with a no hat on.
Evidently, all right. Is there one African American cartoon character?
Franklin.
Thank you. Evidently, at the beginning, Franklin is being frozen out, isolated in the cartoon. He's by himself at the lunch table, or whatever. So I'm just saying it was an issue. If you Google this stuff, it comes up. Just telling you. I didn't make it up. I'm not the snowflake.
I'll look into it.
Just reporting.
I mean, the fact that they had one black Peanuts character named Franklin, like, what should we go with? Jefferson?
It's like Josh. You don't meet a lot of black guys named Franklin.
Todd.
You know? I'm sorry?
Do you meet a lot of black guys named Franklin?
You thought no black guys were named Dawn. You thought there was like Dawn.
I think back in the day, that was a stereotypical name that you would assign to a fictional African-American character.
Yeah.
Washington.
Roosevelt.
Jefferson.
Roosevelt, yeah.
You know, these are all names that...
President names.
Wasn't Jefferson the name of...
Yeah, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Exactly. So
hey,
it's...
Mike
you don't have to go back to the 50s or 60s.
Yeah,
you can go back to, you know, the 80s where these things were still commonplace, but I'm going to look into the...
I like
the
that you know his name. That was good. I didn't know... Yeah.
Franklin.
That was yeah, lost. Well, that was they lost
be a Dan never took cartoon. The time to learn his name.
Your kids watch that cartoon with the turtle. Hey, it's Franklin.
No.
Coming over to play.
Nope.
Growing strong.
Oh, nope. Wow. Don't know about that one.
617-779-0985.
Tim is in Quincy. Tim.
Hey, guys, Tim. How's it going?
Hey.
Tim. Hey, how we doing?
Hey,
what's
Tim?
Up?
All right. So, yeah, I just wanted to make my point. I don't think the AFC East is as bad as everyone, like, points it out to be. I think the last 2 years, the AFC East has actually had two playoff teams from each, from the division.
Yeah, how many playoff wins in this century for the Dolphins and Bills? The answer is zero.
I'm not talking about playoff wins. I'm talking about playoff teams. I thought we were talking about regular season there.
I'm telling you.
How many playoff wins do the Chiefs have?
In this century, I would submit that the teams in their division have more playoff wins than the teams.
Okay, so I'm talking about teams that made the playoffs, so the regular season.
Okay.
Well, and so the last 2 years, they've actually been good. And my other point is that, usually, if the Patriots are going to lose, it's to an AFC East team. They usually kick the crap out of the rest of the NFL, and they'll lose to AFC East teams.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think the AFC East is as bad as you're making it seem.
It is.
No, because the Bills were 10-6 last year.
Yeah.
And Miami was what? 10-6 or
10-6 the year before.
Yeah, 10-6 the year before.
So that's not. And then they have to face the Patriots, who are obviously a monster.
In the last 18 years, the other three teams are 80 or 90 games under 500, an aggregate number. It's like 380.
In the last 2 years, the AFC East has sent two teams to the playoffs.
He's right. They've had a wild card team in each of the last 2 years.
Okay. The three of them.
Because what you were talking about was this is where. You're saying this is where the AFC East benefits the Patriots because they don't have another.
Well, they clinch at Thanksgiving.
Here's what I would say.
Nice.
The Chargers seem like a better team than either of those last two AFC East playoff teams. Where there's, now they're on a roll and they're actually a really good team. I mean, the Patriots were 14-2 in 2016. They were four games better than the next team in their division. Four more wins. Whereas with Kansas City and the Chargers, it's going to be closer.
Yep.
Those feel like better teams. That's what I would say. But I've defended the AFC East to you in the past.
Yeah, it's fruitless.
I think I've done a pretty good job at it. It's not good, but it's not as bad as you make it out to be.
Yeah, it is.
There are a lot of other bad divisions.
No, the other divisions all have some sort of rotation in the last 18 years. Like the NFC West, I think they've all been in the Super Bowl, the whole division, in the last 10 years.
But
there's a rotation system where there's alternating teams. In this division, three of them all suck every year. So that's
right,
the difference.
One team benefits.
One team benefits, and good for that team.
I get what you're saying, but you also can't discount the fact that team's been really good.
The team is really good, but they're never pushed in their division. Ever.
No. Rarely.
Mm. I mean, it's chaos. There's nine coaches for the Bills, nine coaches for the Dolphins, 17 quarterbacks for the Dolphins.
That's funny, though. Ryan Tannehill's 4-1 against you in the last five games.
No one knows what that's about. Yeah. I know. That's weird. And you don't even like him.
I can't stand him.
Don't try that. Don't try that on.
And how many wins do you look at, though, and say, it's a good win for the Dolphins?
Well, there's the one the Pats didn't try 3 years ago, remember, when they didn't try?
Yes.
That was unfortunate. Cost them, too.
Bill's in Westford. Bill.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Bill.
What do you got?
Great ghosts.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Bill?
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Dan Shaughnessy a question because I know he's a baseball expert. The games are so long, they're getting hard to watch, as everybody knows. So I'm thinking maybe they could add cheerleaders between innings.
Yay or nay on cheerleaders in baseball?
I think not.
No?
No? We have enough going on.
What if they wore those outfits like they wore in that Tom Hanks baseball movie with the women? A Madonna.
Oh, League of Their Own.
Yeah.
Those were players.
Yeah. But like,
they were players.
Pom poms with them.
No. No. Not happening. Mm. No. I think some of the
colleges. So, no to cheerleaders in baseball.
I think some of the colleges.
He's down on that. He's down on the cheerleaders.
So, you don't think, like, in between innings, like, the crowd will get all excited?
No. No, I don't think so. No. No. Let's get on with the game. Fewer commercials.
Oh, yeah.
Play faster between innings. Let's go.
Pitch clock.
Yeah, a lot of things.
Hey, how about Sunday Night Baseball, moving it up to 7 o'clock?
That's they're having like Yanks. It's like the 30th anniversary. They're having a big party. I think Adrian Gonzalez is like the master of ceremonies.
The cooler.
30th anniversary of
Sunday Night Baseball. He hates it. It's very inconvenient. It's very bad. You know, baseball players always stay in good hotels, don't they, Dan?
Oh, yes.
Don't they always stay in good
swank.
Ones?
It's good. It's good now.
Good. Well, yeah, I'm talking about, in the era that Adrian Gonzalez played in.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, it must be tough. Tough life.
Jeez.
Tough life. Awful room service. Yeah. Probably terrible.
And the man played in San Diego, so he got to come here and play in games that mattered. So he should have been quiet.
That's not what he was about, though.
No.
Even a little bit.
No. Hey, this is the man whose team voted to him to go away during the World Series. I mean, that was like, that was their request. Stay in Spain. You know, he was
in Spain.
He was in Spain when they were in the World Series. And he said, I'll be back. They said, it's all right. We're good.
He wasn't even in the country.
He was barred from the dugout.
He wasn't even, never mind not being in the dugout or with his team. He left the country.
Yeah, that was for the NLCS. And when he came back, they said, we're good. Because he came back, he worked out with them before, I don't know, games three or four or something.
He's anti-Pedroia. Pedroia
won it. They said, we don't want him.
They sent him on his way.
They did. They banished him.
We're going to get to baseball with you because there's a lot to get to.
There's a lot to get to. A
lot to get to.
Oh, Beetle, I'm so ready for you on one thing.
What?
The Veterans Committee in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think you should just get to it now, then.
If you're ready.
Yeah, let's do this.
This is like Harold Baines is the bane of all existence now for the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable. So you had 16 guys get together. And evidently, Reinsdorf strong-armed the committee, and he got 12 votes, which is three-quarters, which is necessary, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
How do you strong-arm the committee? How does that happen?
If you're Reinsdorf, the Prince of Darkness knows how to do this. You know, he can do this. And Harold Baines, if I'm – we can start wherever you want. Dwight Evans, Tony Oliva, it's like everybody's going to be raising their hand, and all of the groups for their guys come forward. Harold Baines, 285 hitter – 22 seasons, MVP top 10, I think, once or twice, All-Star six times.
Okay, here's a question I had yesterday when we talked about
terrible.
This. Is there anybody who's saying otherwise? Outside of this committee and outside of the people that were...
I don't think so.
It's nice you're leading the opposition.
Outside of those 12 people that voted for him.
It's good.
Is there anybody else out there defending the choice?
I don't know. I mean,
well, the answer is obviously
I just
no.
hang my head. It's
you would have heard it by now.
It's just going to – it is not the Hall of Very Good. He was a very good player for a really, really long time. This makes he makes Craig Biggio look like Rogers Hornsby, on the thing now. It's like it is – again, there's nothing wrong with being very good, but it's not Hall of Fame. And Harold Baines is not Hall of Fame. And I feel bad. He's a nice man, and he's coming to Cooperstown. Way to go. But this is going to start the noise for – hundreds of guys, Albert Bell. We can go down. There's a million guys better than Harold Baines. Million.
Lee Smith in or out?
I'm not a big closer guy. He got all the votes. He got all 16. I mean,
so you wouldn't put Rivera in?
Oh, well, of course, Rivera's dying. Rivera's the other categories, Gossage, Rivera, you know, Suter, invented a pitch, all that stuff like that. But no, I mean, just, what do you call it? Putting a lot of numbers together over a lot of years, especially with phony three-out saves, the Hoffman rule, all that sort of
thing.
Did
you vote for Eck?
Yeah, different category. Again, 20-game winner, and he was MVP as a closer. Tell me how many MVPs Lee Smith was. You know, I mean, Eck was MVP and Cy Young the same year, 20-game winner, and one of the greatest closers of all time. No question. First ballot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, for a reliever, it's got to be, you know, this is why I'd never vote for Craig Kimbrell, this guy, you know. I mean, you know it when you see it. And Eck was, Rivera is, Gossage was, Suter was, but not Glenn Hoffman, not this guy, Craig Kimbrell. No.
Trevor Hoffman, not Glenn. Glenn was his brother.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm just helping you out.
No, I appreciate that. Right. And the old man was a singer. He was a singing usher in Anaheim.
I'm sorry?
The father. He was the singing usher at the Big A. Was Glenn and Trevor Hoffman's dad.
That was a thing?
Yes, it was a thing.
Who the hell knew?
I bring this stuff to you.
You'd be perfect for that empty Red Sox radio job that they've got right now.
At Riveting Radio. Oh,
hey, yeah. So, pay attention.
Hi, you know, his dad.
Let's talk about Pittsburgh.
Singing usher in Anaheim. Yeah. All right, so this is my question, though. There's no opposition to this. There's 12 guys that voted in.
But we all have to live with it now. He's in the Hall of Fame.
And so I want to advance this. What happens now with voters, with the writers? Do they now change their standards as a result of this?
A lot. Well, I'm sure. Oh, can I vote for 100 guys? Please. You know, no. I mean, it's just, and again, not to get into the, but imagine now you're going to have a Hall of Fame with Barry Bonds out and Harold Baines in.
It's disgraceful.
I mean, that is
cheap in the Hall of Fame.
That's not good.
It's disgraceful. It's going to hurt the Hall of Fame.
It's just unfortunate. And he's a nice guy, and he had a nice career.
Who cares?
But boy, oh boy.
Seriously, I mean, who cares if he's a nice guy?
What
does that have to do with it?
This was the Tammany Hall smoke-filled room, Mayor Richard Daley, whatever. This was bad. I'm going to go get the committee members.
I want to ask you another question because I don't know the answer to all this committee stuff that I'd like to maybe get some clarification
on. Bare-knuckle brawling.
Miss something?
You got to wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times.
Yep.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Check scheduled to talk at 11:45 this morning. I'm sure he will be much like Mike Tomlin yesterday. I'm sure we'll get the same level of information just voluntarily.
No transparency.
The opposite of Mike Tomlin.
The health and safety of some of these guys as we push into this week. Ben, obviously we got him evaluated when we got back. He has rib or several rib contusions. That'll be addressed throughout the week.
Thank you. Dan Shaughnessy is with us, 617-779-0985. Dan, what are all these committees at the Hall of Fame? Can you explain these to us?
No, actually, no. I mean,
really,
okay. Well, then who can?
Really, so the main,
I mean, who can?
The main
you're
vote,
a longtime baseball writer.
The main ballot.
Spink Award winner.
Is, you know, 560 guys, all the BBWAA guys. That's the annual ballot. That's due at the end of the month. And on that one, you know, all the names are on there. You can check no more than 10. And in that one this year, as we've talked about, it's going to be Mariano Rivera is going to get in. Edgar Martinez is probably going to vault in. And we wonder about Roy Halladay, if he will, in his first year of eligibility,
he probably
get
won't.
In. And I think that will be it for this year on that ballot. Now, there's a rotation system that they employ at these winter meetings. They'll do a certain era, like the modern era, or the old-time era, or it could be the Negro Leagues era, and they rotate this. And guys from different periods of
wait,
baseball.
Wait, what rotates? I'm confused.
Well, like, in other words, like Louis Tion's not eligible on those committees every time they meet at the meetings. But guys in his era come up like every 4 years or so.
So they only vote every 4 years?
They vote every year, but it's a different era that they vote on.
Oh.
Or it could just be founders or pioneers or whatever. There's a specific nature to it, like what group they're dealing with here. And And then it's 16 voters, most of whom are Hall of Famers, and you need 12 votes to get in. There's also a couple of Steve Hurt, the stats guy, is one of the 16 voters. Tim Kirkchin from ESPN. Oh. Claire Smith from ESPN, who's another Spink winner. And then, as I said, Reinsdorf is in there, and a lot of Hall of Fame players. I think, you know, Al Kaline is guys, you know, you could find that list.
But wasn't that a different committee than what voted on this?
This was a 16-member committee, in which I think 12 of them are Hall of Famers.
Oh, so it is. It's that same group.
Yeah. I mean, the panel rotates. Eck was on it a year or two ago because he called me to talk about some guys. Like, he wanted to go in armed before getting in there. But it's a lot of ex-players, and, you know, I could go to the internet Google machine here. We could
find it. They have it on. They have a list.
There's
of
16
who's...
names of the people that, that made that vote on Sunday. And Steinbrenner was one of the candidates, as were, obviously, Lee Smith and Harold Baines. And, Lee Smith got 16 out of 16 votes. It's a little bit more like the NFL thing where it's the you have advocates and it's bare knuckle brawling and then they emerge in the smoke filled room and they come out with these names. There are years that they elect no one because it's hard to get 12 out of 16 guys on this and guys are protective of their own guys, etc. But evidently on this thing, Reinsdorf was able to carry the day for Harold Baines, who was his player, of course, just about the whole time, and that committee. That voted. I don't know all the players. George Brett might have been on there. You know, it was a number of guys.
So there's the expansion era
there
committee members.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Johnny Bench, Eddie Murray, Palmer, Frank Robinson, Ozzy. I mean, are all these guys?
That's not what this vote was.
That's a different group.
No.
Then there's the golden era committee.
See, yeah.
Which has Al Kaline, Pat Gillick, Tommy Lasorda. Is that the group? Because I don't think that was the group either.
I don't think that was the group either.
So there's all these groups. Like who
So I heard it was the group with Reinsdorf, who was the owner of the White Sox, La Russa, who was the manager,
they were there.
And Pat Gillick, who was the GM of the O's when he was with the Orioles.
Where's that list?
I don't know about Gillick, but I know that Reinsdorf and La Russa were part of the 16. And Kirkchin and Steve Hurt and Claire Smith. Those would be five of the people that voted. But most of them are Hall of Famers. And obviously, Kirkchin and Claire and Hurt are not. So the other, you know, Reinsdorf's a Hall of Famer, right? I mean, he's in the, I mean, I think, I don't know.
Today's game era.
All right, there we go.
Oh,
I think you got it.
There it is.
All right, now we got it.
Roberto Alomar, Burt Blylevin, Pat Gillick, Tony La Russa, Greg Maddux,
these are
Joe
the people
Morgan,
you can blame.
John Scherholz, Ozzie Smith, Joe Torre. Oh, yeah, okay. This is your group.
Yep.
Kirkchin. Claire Smith.
That's the group. Those are the 16. So 12 of those 16 people voted for Harold Baines. Yep. And again.
So this committee won't vote for another 4 years.
That's my understanding. They rotate these things.
This Hall of Fame.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever.
This is the dumbest segment I've ever sat in. All right. Well, this is like, well, what's dumber than the NFL? It's the same. Bare knuckle brawling. But Beetle, to your point. This tells you that the writers, more often than not, get it right. Harold Baines never cleared 6% of the vote.
No, the writers do a better job than 6%. Allowing the Hall of Famers themselves to do it, obviously.
You need 75%. He got 6%, and now he's in the Hall of Fame. So we do a far better job vetting than these guys do.
So, like, Andy McPhail is on this, but why is he in this group? Well,
he's baseball. He's, like, third generation. He's been in baseball his whole life.
So?
70 years. Well, why is Tim Kirkchin? Why is Steve Hurd? Why is Claire Smith?
I mean, well, at least, the journalists have done a better job.
Well, yes, but
the Hall
this,
of
is
Fame.
Not, this is a committee, and most of them are in the Hall of Fame. I think most of those people are Hall of Famers.
So we don't know who didn't vote for Baines, though.
You'd have to guess.
I'm guessing that the writers didn't vote for him. There's no way they could have voted for him.
They're not allowed
so
to talk about it or disclose it.
What? What do you want?
Nothing. He's talking.
We're waiting for Belichick's press conference.
Yeah.
We missed
a
golden opportunity.
We missed something.
Our friend William Bendison was the mic check at the podium.
Check
for the,
1, 2, 3, 4. Hello.
Why didn't we
checking
play it?
1, 2. Because nobody was rolling on it down there. The hell we doing down there?
We're airing it live.
Well,
how does somebody not see that starting to happen?
If we need to fill a little
anybody
bit
on
here,
the ground down there,
Hardy could talk about Charlie Brown Christmas or Thanksgiving, as it were.
No, we don't really have to do okay. that one.
I'm just saying.
Dan's looking for some vindication on his story. You were right. There are some people who were saying that the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special was racist.
It's a little different.
Because they depicted a Thanksgiving table where, you know, Linus is at the head, and on one side it's Charlie Brown and
his sister
and Sally and Peppermint Patty and Snoopy, and it looks like
where's Pigpen?
It looks like Peppermint Patty's friend Marcy is at the other head of the table, I believe, and then on one side of the long table by himself is Franklin.
All by himself. Like four individuals on the opposite side.
Yeah, like right. Four plates.
Franklin's by himself.
He's a good eater.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, Dan was not making it up. There were calls to have that somehow wrecked. I don't know how you go back and change, something that was animated 50 years ago. But
testing 1, 2, 3. No, Ron to Pittsburgh.
No, I can't hear you.
Great pipes, man. Amazing pipes. Howard.
Who had it?
What do you say, Howard Cosell? Credit, is he credit. About to drop a Howard Cosell reference?
I think I heard Benny say
Mark Daniels, Providence Journal.
Good job, Daniels.
Tweeted it out.
Nice job.
Howard Cosell-esque.
Howard Cosell-esque, he says.
Does
the Maven.
Who says we can't hear you? That was good. I think that's Benny. Yeah, I like that. That's clever.
I can't get enough.
Yeah.
Well, Bill Belichick's coming up. We'll carry the press conference live here on 98.5 The Sports.
I'm going to read this right now. Bill Belichick is powered by the Oakers Company. New England's premier technology and audiovisual solution provider for over 97 years. Visit OCKERS.com. That's Oakers. Technology for tomorrow. Zoe's big on Oakers.
Yes, sir.
Those are his friends.
Love it. OCKERS. Oakers Company.
Oakers.
Yep.
They sponsor Chilling. Bill Belichick's press conference, which should be beginning a minute and a half ago. We're going to wait on him? Is that what we're going to do?
I'm watching the video of William Bennetson at the podium.
Of course you are.
That Mark Daniels tweeted out.
Go straight to Gillette Stadium. Here's Coach Belichick.
Top of the league in rushing defense, lead the league in sacks. So, good in kickoff coverage. A solid team all the way around. Very explosive. Make a lot of big plays. Dangerous from any point in the field. And, it's always a great environment there. This will be a big challenge for us on the road. Against a good football team that does a lot of things well. So, a lot of respect for the Steelers. This will be a good football game.
Bill, it's obviously one of the tougher environments to play in, but given your history there and the intensity there, is it one of the environments you enjoy playing in more than maybe any other?
Yeah, that's tough there. I mean, I'm really worried about the other games that have happened there or haven't happened there. It's all focused on this one. So, see how it goes on Sunday.
It looks like he usually does with Pittsburgh. Are you also talking about schematically? I know defensively they've kind of tried to have the same system over the years.
Yeah, I mean, Butler's been there 5 years. Tomlin's been there 13, whatever it is. Yeah.
What about offensively? They've had a new offensive coordinator. How much change or similarities do you see this year?
It's pretty similar. He's been there... Randy's been there for like 11 years, 9 as a quarterback coach. So, they Key and Roethlisberger obviously have a good feel for each other, and certainly the passing game. They're very, very proficient.
Between their two starting receivers and their two tight ends, it seems like a pick your poison type of offense.
Backs, too. Yep. Washington, Switzer, they got a lot of weapons.
With the back situation, is Samuel used a little bit differently, or has he been able to kind of carry the same kind of responsibilities as Connor has this year?
He's in there on every down. Yeah, he's been an every down player for him.
I think during the pre-draft process, he was on the combine, he was listed as a tight end. Do you know why that was? Is he just a capable receiver? That's
played a lot of different positions at NC State. They've used him as a slot receiver, tight end, running back, a little bit fullback. So He did a lot of different things. Very athletic guy, good in the passing game, good with the ball in his hands. He was a guy they tried to get the ball to and put in a lot of different spots.
Steelers do anything similar in terms of moving him around, or is he pretty much just...
Basically played running back for him. I mean, they go empty, so he's out detached in some empty formations, but most of it's 11 personnel, and they use their backs the way they use them, the way they use Bell, Connor, you know, split out some, mostly in the backfield.
Which is Smith-Schuster just added to their offense. Seems like they've always had a pretty good tassel game
for that. He's a dynamic player, tremendous player. Great with the ball in his hands, great hands, makes some spectacular catches. Hard to tackle. This is very good.
One of the biggest challenges in terms of secondary coverage for James Brown.
You're not going to get anybody better than these two guys, plus the quarterback. They got a lot of other guys too, but I mean, these two receivers are, you know, elite.
It's been impressive to see them basically scout all these receivers and draft a lot of these guys. Every year it seems like the Steelers are finding new receivers to kind of play into their system, like Brown is a way around pick.
Yeah, these two guys are really good. I mean, I don't care where they were taken, they're good.
Dylan, in the almost 5 months that you guys have been working since you started at training camp, how has your team, what have you learned about your team in terms of how they've responded to turning the page from week to week and embracing like a new week after, no matter what happened?
Yeah, well, we've been at it a long time, so you know, we're at it again this week. Another big game. So we'll see how it goes.
What you've seen from them embracing that process week to week?
Teams had a good attitude. They've worked hard.
Bill, when Steven Gostkowski misses a couple kicks, is he the type of player that you don't need to give any reassurance to and just kind of move on from that? Or is that something that you have to
try? Steve's kicking the league a long time. There's a lot of aspects to kicking. You know, three people involved, not just one. It's not like a kickoff where you just put the ball on the tee. So, just collectively, we got to obviously, you know, expectations are high, and hopefully, we'll be able to convert on all of our scoring opportunities.
That's a goal.
But nobody takes it more seriously than Steve does. So, I have a lot of confidence in him.
Bill, Ben referenced the two tight ends. How does McDonald complement what James does, and how much of a factor is he for them?
Yeah, well, they're not on the field all that much together. 10-15% of the time, maybe 20% at the most. So they both play in the single tight end sets. They're both good. Now, McDonald's is a tough kid. He's strong. Sure, Roethlisberger has a lot of confidence in both guys. They're both very dependable. They're big targets, catch ball well, dependable.
Mentioned yesterday, you referenced their interior offensive line and their length. It seems like maybe they have an increased size in there. What's the best way to try to combat that? Do you try to use longer players yourselves in there against those guys, or is it technique?
Yeah, well, again, we've played against long players before. I think the question was about the entire group, and I'd say that's kind of just as a group. Probably have as much as anybody. So, yeah, look, they do a good job. They're well coached. You know, Mike's been there for, I don't know, 5 years. You know, it's been really the same line all 3 years, the last 3 years, including Gilbert, the right tackle. I mean, I don't know if he's in or out this week, but he's obviously their right tackle, so. He's there. It's been a pretty consistent group. They work well together. They handle things, movement, games, different looks. You know, it's a solid group.
Is there, maybe not, but is there anything you tell your team when you're facing the Steelers that lost three straight games in heartbreaking fashion? Is there anything you tell your team special, how you handle a team when you're facing that? Because confidence might be a little down, you know. Is there anything?
Who's confidence?
What?
Who's confidence?
The Steelers, you know,
so. You know, I think if you guys are around competitive guys, you wouldn't see that. So I don't really see that. I don't give that any credibility at all. You know, competitive people compete. That's what they do. And certainly that's what the Steelers are. So I'm sure we'll get their best. I don't think they'll get our best. We'll see what happens.
You tend to be playing against Roethlisberger with his ability to kind of extend plays with his strength and his footwork.
Yeah, he's as good as anybody at that. He's strong. He can stand in the pocket, stiff arms defenders, throws the ball. He's got great length himself to be able to see over practically everything. He's got a tremendous arm and deliver with no wind up or step into the throw, or he can just flat foot it and, you know, fire it 50, 60 yards downfield. So he's got great poise, great patience. He knows how long he can wait, and usually a lot of times he waits right till the bitter end. And then delivers the ball a lot of times, like on a 97-yard touchdown pass to Smith-Schuster. You know, he held it right to the last second, got nailed just as he released the ball, and, you know, it's a 97-yard touchdown pass. So, you know, that's the kind of thing he does. He hangs in there to the last second and makes those throws, and he's tough. He's really tough. I have a ton of respect for him.
Okay, that is Bill Belichick wrapping up his press conference. He is brought to you by Oakers Company, New England's premier technology and audiovisual solution provider for over 97 years. Visit OCKERS.com. That's Oakers Technology for Tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.